Ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode, we explore, expand, and evolve our understanding of the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity and exponential growth. And now welcome your hosts, Dr. Jeffrey Smith and Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast.
All righty. Hello, everybody. Dr. Jeff Smith here with James R. Case, my esteemed co-host in Adventures in Truth Podcast. And I think I got the initials wrong there, but
I was sitting here thinking, should I say something or should I just leave it alone?
Well, if I put my glasses back on, I could probably read that it's R. James Case. Right. But anyway, how are you tonight, Jim?
Oh, I'm well. Happy to be here. Looking forward to another amazing adventure in exploring the truths here.
Right on. So this particular topic tonight, the overarching issue for me is still an ongoing deep dive into love, and its opposite, if it has one, would be the energy of fear, and being able to overcome the frequency that David Hawkins and many others believe that most of the world resonates and operates in a frequency of fear, that you could categorize any state of the opposite of ease, which we call dis-ease, any of those conditions, from the most basic to upset, to whatever that means, from mild irritation, frustration, bitterness, resentment, anger, hostility, rage, depression, anxiety, any state of mind that can also be felt in the body is really what we're talking about. And that if you're here on the planet, you're going to experience some of that at some point in your life. And for a lot of people on the planet, they're experiencing a lot of that for most of their life. And perhaps that's really the journey that we're all experiencing, is coming from a state where you show up as a baby and the very first thing that happens to you is you get whacked on the butt and you start crying. It's like, you know, you've been here for less than a minute and all of a sudden you're crying. And then the rest of your life you're getting smacked around and you're crying, as kind of a metaphor. But the ability from going from a baby to a toddler to an adolescent into an adulthood is this thing that we call affect regulation and emotional stability or emotional intelligence and some kind of an awakening and a spiritual awareness to where we're able to overcome the fears that just permeate the planet at every level, from the news we watch to some of the music we listen to the TV shows. It's just anywhere and everywhere around us. Everybody listening to this knows somebody that has cancer, or you know somebody that knows somebody that has cancer. And, you know, we're all getting older, and we somehow think that getting older is a requirement to our hair changes color or falls out and our bones start to, I mean, there's just all this built-in belief system that primarily has its roots in fear. Mm. And we have emergency responders who are constantly exposed to car crashes and fires and just somewhat of the crises of modern day life. They get exposed to it all the time, and in their minds and their spouses and families' minds is like, you know, is dad going to come home tonight? Is mom going to come home tonight if she's in the fire department or whatever? It's like the people in the emergency rooms, all these people who are exposed to bleeding and broken bones and injury and crashes and violence. And if you're not directly exposed to it, you'll hear about it in the news. So there's just so much of an exposure for all of us. of being in a frequency that we're operating in a level of fear. And that's happening at a subconscious, unconscious level, mostly, where it manifests into the conscious mind. That's when we reach for something to ease us, to put us back in a state of ease, away from the state of dis-ease. And we look to vacations to do that. We look to a massage to do that. We look to a retreat or a sanctuary, a bubble bath. You know, there's a bunch of healthy ways to create a state of ease. And then if that isn't strong enough or doesn't work, we go straight to the bottle in all of its various forms, or we wind up in the most extreme cases in some kind of an intravenous drug use, or maybe even an abuse of a prescription kind sorts of drugs. But we have this belief that I'm in pain and I can't handle this, and not realizing, truly not realizing, that the pain is a manifestation of the fears that we have absorbed and that we believe, that we're really like fear sponges. And over time, that fear physically, mentally, emotionally manifests itself in our bodies at the physical level that we call pain. So you have any thoughts about just the kind of the layout of, we've talked a little bit about this before, Jim, and I thought it would be a good place just to start our podcast tonight as a way of hitting a reset or an alternative to all the amazing things that some people do. Like they practice yoga, they have, you know, they have a meditation time, they try to eat right, they try to be healthy and hang out with happy, friendly minded people. I don't think the majority of the planet's doing that, but even those people that are really trying that, still their hair falls out, they get old, they get disease. And we all seem to buy into it at some level that one must suffer in order to be part of the human family. And I know it kind of went all over the place in that introduction, but a little feedback would be great here so I can kind of reorganize my thoughts.
Well, I think the thing that I wrote down, and the one thing that I wrote down is fear saturation. That might be a good term to coin, because that is, it, at least in everything we've talked about, in my experience, the things that I've written about, all talk about that fear saturation, that inundation of continual stimulation of the fight or flight mechanism on a daily, hourly, minutely basis, that's all driven from outside influences. So it's kind of interesting to me as you're talking about this, and probably for another topic, but the idea that we're so saturated by the fear mechanism almost makes me believe that it's that there's a part of that that's actually very deliberate, because it manages and controls the human experience. That's the purpose, that's the intent, is that if we can keep people managed, and fear is the great manager, because there's so many things to be afraid of and that can be easily triggered to be made afraid of. The number one being death. From the minute you're born, it's the thing that you're trained to fear the most. And everything dovetails off of that fear in some form or another. It keeps kind of piling on. But yeah, I think that this sort of fear saturation is endemic, and it's really what we speak to on a daily basis, and what we do here each week with Adventures in Truth is attempting to go beyond or go above or below or whatever you want to call it, but to step out of that energy of that inundation, to step out of that experience, to create a different state of being, and to you know, you were talking about people and doing their yoga and eating the right foods, and all of that is good. But without the shift state, you're only going to find marginal relief, because the core of the thought process is still grounded in the fear-based reality. So while you're becoming aware that doesn't serve, so I'm going to start eating better, so I start putting a better chemical balance into my body, so the physiology starts to respond differently. I do yoga because yoga affects my energetic system in a way that, again, gives me the opportunity to respond differently. But if I'm only seeing it as a, excuse me, if I'm only seeing it as a one point remedy or a one, you know, a feel good, then that's what it's going to do for a short period of time before the world comes back into your experience again. And that level of saturation, just it's hard to resist.
So you mentioned that fear of death is at the core of everything, sits on top of that fear of death. And we may have mentioned in previous podcasts that that goes back as far as William James, Freud, Jung, Immanuel Kant. Those were the, you know, we're talking 300-400 years ago.
Yeah.
All agreed that there's this underlying subconscious mostly. And, you know, Jung described it in the collective unconscious mind, this fear of death. So I have some exciting news that part of this podcast and the main piece of this podcast is actually oriented toward relieving us from this fear of death. You're going to have to bear with us for a while because this topic, if you think about it, if that's the number one fear for all human beings, and Jim and I are sitting here in front of cameras and microphones tonight saying that through this discussion, we have a means in which to free people up from that fear of death, you're going to have to give us the courtesy of patiently walking this journey with us that we can fully explain it to give it its due. Because we could just stop right now and say, there's nothing to be afraid of. We've died many times. We're actually experts at it. It's no different than going to sleep and waking up in the morning. We could stop right here and say, it's really just that simple. And people would hear it, but it wouldn't have the ability to penetrate down into the deeper parts of us that we could believe it and then begin to live it. So that's really what this podcast is we could give you the sound bites right up front and in the very beginning and say, good night, everybody. Have a great life. Just start going and applying this. But because of what Jim said, this saturation of fear, the fears are so deeply entrenched and they're down in the subconscious, unconscious mind, of which this podcast is not a subconscious, unconscious frequency. We're broadcasting it in a conscious frequency that by holding it in the conscious mind repetitively and constantly going over it and saying these things over and over again to yourself, that then has the chance of penetrating down into the subconscious and eventually into the unconscious mind to where we really can be free of fear. But it's a constant programming. It's a constant programming.
Well, it's really important to remember that in the scheme, and important to remember that there is a structure to the physical reality in which we live. And part of that structure, you know, we've talked over time, and many great writers and teachers have talked over time about the idea that it's all energy. Even Elon Musk knows it's all energy. Everything is energy. So if you think in terms of that, and it doesn't require you to have to suspend anything, if you just take the concept of the idea that it's all about energy, even if you don't quite comprehend it, I'm going to layer some stuff in here to help make more sense. So by virtue of the fact that we have, as we've talked about over time, this sort of dualistic experience, so you have the ego that is born of the physical reality. So, and you have this soul that is expressing through this physical vessel. So in the context of being within time and space, there is this thing called mass consciousness. And mass consciousness is an energy similar to what Jeff just alluded to or talked about. It is a constant stream of energy that is available, and I don't want to call it available, it sort of sits on top of everything because we're all human beings. So being human beings, we have brains. Because we have brains, we're thoughts constantly swirling, and we're having thoughts and we're hearing thoughts and we're experiencing thoughts and we're walking through other people's thoughts. But that whole collective idea, the idea of culture, the idea of how we create a society is all based on this sort of mass conscious willingness to believe or suspend belief. Unfortunately, religion is based in that same reality. It may have originally potentially been structured as something outside of that, but what it became was a way to manage and control people, which is part of the fear mechanism. So while there is an elevated space within religion to potentially go to a much grander space, even within the religion is a limitation built in that you can never be that. And so you can strive to be kind of like it, but ultimately you're a failure because you're never going to get there. So here we have this mass conscious energy, this big band of everything that everybody believes all mixed together, and all the stuff that is repeated constantly. And it doesn't matter whether it's through the people or the media or however it shows up. It's taught in schools, it's taught in churches, it's taught everywhere. The same ideas, and we try to expand on them, but it's a big soup that we all swim in.
Right.
The reason that I'm making such a big deal about this is because it is there that you have to transcend. So how do you do that? How do you transcend from, if you're, you know, and this mass consciousness also has levels within it. So the further down, as Jeff alluded to or talked about, the more you're immersed in that, whether it be through addiction or through a self-abuse or abuse of others, you're in a lower frequency, you're in a much lower vibration, and the impact of that fear is much deeper and much more saturated into your experience. But as you break free, you know, the whole process of the 12 steps, and it, the idea is that you can walk this ladder to move up the scale of lightening the burden of this mass consciousness by seeking a power greater than yourself. The problem with some of those thought processes is that it never equates you to that power. It equates that power as still something separate from you.
Right.
And that, again, is a disconnect because it's not serving the process of shifting state. It's helping you migrate through the level of the mass consciousness so that you can get to a degree less encumbered. But it doesn't free you of that energy. It doesn't free your vibration or your core from that mass experience. So it's important to, if you're doing the yoga is amazing, but you got to make sure that you're doing the yoga from the shift state place, not the physical state place.
Right.
And so I don't want to take this too far because I just wanted to create that sort of foundation for understanding where we're coming from. Everything is energy. So what I want to be able to do is say, this is say there's a stretch of a band, we're going to call it, of mass consciousness, and you're, each individual is in a different vibratory frequency. So say you're at a little bit higher frequency. So you're not in the addiction place. You're not in the abuse state, but there's still the negativity that lives in your experience. You know, most of the time you still got to find a way to propel yourself out of that band into the higher frequencies, into the love band, into the joy band, into the, those places that are very real. And when you're in the mass conscious band and stuck there, much harder to believe exist. And that's really where I wanted to come back to tie with what you were saying, Jeff, is that the challenge is that where we're about to, what the things that we're talking about is the fear still controls our ability to believe there's something more, which is pretty remarkable.
Yes, yes. As we all know, some people who are really fanatical about health and wellness, they're really fussy is the word that's coming to mind, but let's say they're very fussy about the water they drink, the mega vegan diet, you know, absolutely no animals. Like they don't even want an animal to look at their food. I know it sounds like I'm being facetious right now, but I've met people like that.
Yeah.
That they go to such great lengths to protect themselves from EMFs, to not have a TV anywhere in their home, just so fanatical about making sure that they're meditating so many minutes a day, that they're getting their exercise in. And yet they still have some form of disease or ailment, or they're getting older and it's showing up in their body. And it just, it fascinates me that if the whole world had access to a 100% plant-based diet and we were completely GMO and toxin-free and we could have the perfect environments to live in, there would still be illness, injury, sickness, and disease because fear would still exist. And all of those sickness, illness, injury, and disease are simply manifestations. They're a physical manifestation of belief systems in the negative that we would call fear-based. So that's why I know so many doctors that they even have their own supplement line. They really go to the nth degree to make sure everything is just so, but yet their hair is falling out. They're getting older. They've got arthritis in their hands. And all of these conditions are from belief systems that they have, that many, many, many books have been written. And there's so much ancient wisdom that say that these ailments that we manifest in our body are the wisdom of the body trying to direct our attention back to the fear. So if we only try to treat it at the physical, it's just going to shift. You can even have it cut out. You can go get a tumor cut out by a skilled physician, or you can have the best chiropractor who's able to adjust you and manipulate muscles and give you temporary relief. But next week, you're back there again. Yeah. Because you haven't changed the belief systems that created the state of dis-ease in the body that is showing up as pain. So this all seems so clear to me. And it actually, I don't think is very complicated to comprehend it, that pain is simply a physical manifestation of fear. And if we try to address it at the physical level, you might get some temporary relief from that. But until you take it back into the metaphysical and realize where the physical manifestation came from, you're just going to be on a wild goose chase. You'll be up one, this type of yoga went away, and now I'm into this type of yoga. And now it's really important what color yoga pants I wear. And it has to be on a wooden floor, and it can't be next to a power line. And it's just, you know, that's all physical. And maybe there's some truth to each of those things about less than optimal or less than desirable conditions. But honestly, it isn't the conditions that created it. It's the belief systems that we hold about all those things.
That's such a great point, because it's something that I have trouble with in the world, honestly, as I move through the world. We live in a world that has a lot of stuff, a lot of opportunities, possibilities, technology, just a lot of stuff. And we've learned a lot of things, you know, even over the course of the time that I've been on the planet, things that we would never, I mean, what was a GMO? Who the hell knew what a GMO was in 1965 or 60?
That's a car, isn't it?
Yeah. and so even the things that are supposed to be helpful are used as tools of fear. And that to me says it's not helpful. I don't care what it is. I really struggle. You know, you were talking about the people out there who doing the whole on vegan thing and don't even let an animal look at my food and on that goes. It's funny, but it's true. And the part of it that's even sadder is that is a completely fear-based experience.
Yeah.
So you're not getting anywhere except your physiology is probably a little healthier than some others. But the fear is making that obsolete. It's making it's only giving you a breather. I mean, maybe that's not even a fair way to say it, because you got to be able to be in the world, you know, be in the world, but not of it. So we're here, we're humans. We are 7.5 billion of us, all of us having a human experience. And why would we be in a place that we couldn't avail ourselves? We can avail ourselves of choices. That's phenomenal. You know, if not eating meat is a choice that satisfies you, then it's the best possible choice. But if you're not eating meat because it's the spiritual thing to do, you're wasting your energy. And okay, so you may not be getting meat protein, but you're doing nothing else. It truly is accomplishing nothing else.
Well, you've created a religion.
Yeah. I mean, and so how long can you sustain your feeling of better? How long can you sustain the feeling of feeling better when what you're doing is not doing anything? So, you know, it's really that whole placebo thing. It's like, if I think it, then that's what it must be. Well, if it isn't taking you to that place of satisfaction, if it isn't taking you to that shifted state, to that new experience of the connection and the love, then you're not getting where you need to be. And that's what our purpose here is how can we assist people to get to that place? How do we help you navigate out of this fear soup? And I hope that what we do each week is helping navigate out of that fear soup. But today we wanted to take it on in a much more direct path. Because there are ways and options of creating that shift in state that can help propel us significantly into a new experience.
Right. Well, one of the observations that's kind of been running in the back of my mind for the last 25 years is because my focus as a behavioral scientist has been on human behavior and its relationship with physical health and wellness, you know, there does appear to be a correlation there. I don't know that it's a provable correlation, but it seems to be one that most people observe and would say that A plus B usually equals C. You know, there's always exceptions to that. But it's been a fascination of mine that I've only recently come to the awareness of, if the whole planet lived in nature, perhaps like it once did, fear still existed in that setting as well. And they had some pretty strange belief systems to the point where they were willing to sacrifice themselves. They were willing to, been to Peru. I put my hand on the rocks that were used for human sacrifice. And that's one of the prettiest places on the planet I've ever been. And if I could choose a place to live, that might be the place I would choose to live in that setting that would be 100% natural. So isn't it interesting that a place that seems so perfect still led to what appeared to me to be, and it sounds like I'm judging it right now, pretty silly practices about thinking that if I whack Aunt Sally, the gods are going to be happy and give us some more rain. And it's like, you know, that I think you get a sense of, even in the ideal circumstances, fear is still present. Yeah. The introduction of fear is going to creep in somewhere. And so ultimately, again, one of the nuggets that I hope people will take out of this podcast today is, without it sounding like I'm preaching, I'm only giving a reference to a book I familiarized myself with decades ago. You know, there's a scripture in the Good Book that says that we're encouraged to pray without ceasing. And that always bothered me because it's like the way I was taught to pray, it's not really something that I could see myself doing without ceasing. However, if we take that word pray without ceasing and we interject, you need to run positive programming in your mind continually. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can do that. I can constantly tell myself I'm whole, I'm complete, I lack for nothing. I can constantly tell myself, like Abraham Hicks and said, everything is always working out for me. Mm-hmm. I can tell myself things like David Hawkins said, that illness, and I'm not subject to illness, injury, and disease. I can say that I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Let's drop the fear part because that's what we're trying to get away from. But it's like I'm created in a state of awe. I'm on this planet having this human experience, and there really is nothing to be afraid of. As we begin to build those kinds of true, they're more than affirmations. They are core truths. And if you could stay focused on those and just loop it through your mind all the time, to me, now that's an example of praying without ceasing, which is going to keep you out of fear.
Yeah, and let me add to a layer to that, because as you're talking, what I'm hearing, about training the mind, getting laying down new tracks in the mind. But I think what's also important to recognize in prayer is that prayer is also about appreciation. Mm-hmm. Prayer is a state that you can put yourself into, which is not just running affirmations, but being in a state of appreciation I prefer appreciation to gratitude, because I think appreciation encompasses me as the creator instead of someone else as the creator.
Right.
But that's just my personal belief and preference about that. But preference, you know, but anyway, appreciation, gratitude, being in a state of receptivity, being in a state of, you know, when I think of prayer, I think of sort of this openness. I think of this vessel that's expressing all of that and wanting to touch base with the greatest part of myself or the greatest part of us or whatever, however it is you look at it. But remembering that it's a state within itself. It's not another activity like yoga or, you know, and yoga is another activity, but you can create a state within yoga that allows you to go there in the same capacity, which can actually literally, if you use the proper expression in yoga, put you in prayer. So it's, you know, prayer, meditation, they're all good words and it is an encompassing experience.
Right. So yes, I like that version of prayer that you're referring to. But when, you know, when a book like the Bible makes a statement like pray without ceasing, the definition of prayer really needs to be better defined rather than just pushing one word out there, making the assumption that everybody knows what that means. For example, when somebody says, I'm aware of what's going on in your life and, hey, Jim, I'll be praying for you. That usually implies there's some kind of problem going on in your life and you needed a little extra juju coming from the big guy up in the sky that's going to, you know, smile and have mercy on you and grant you an easier path through what you're going through, even though the easier path is probably only going to make you have to go through it again because it's the harder path that actually teaches us the lesson. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of misconception about what prayer is.
Well, and that's why here, let me break out the definition.
Okay.
So, and interestingly enough, well, we'll deal with that afterwards. So prayer, this definition says a prayer is an invocation or act that seeks to activate a rapport with an object of worship through deliberate communication. In the narrow sense, the term refers to an act of supplication or intercession directed towards a deity or deified ancestor. Another definition, a solemn request for help or expression of thanks addressed to God or an object of worship.
Right.
So, interestingly enough, there are not any definitions that don't include religion of some sort. So here, an address to God or a God in word or thought said a prayer for the success of a voyage, a set of words used in prayer, an earnest request or wish, a devout petition to God or an object of worship, spiritual communion with God or an object of worship. Yeah, so all the same, similar, all similar.
Well, I like the idea of the supplication, which is a word that most people aren't familiar with, and that's just to dine with. It's where I think we get the word supper from.
Oh, yeah.
And an invocation, another, again, these are mostly like words you would hear at church or some kind of a religious ceremony, but it's really about relationship. And a lot of it depends on who you're in relationship with, which really is well beyond the purpose of this podcast.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, if we go back to, you know, the guy that wrote that scripture I was sharing, the encouragement for us to pray without ceasing was the Apostle Paul, wrote a big chunk of the Bible and, you know, gave us a lot of good advice. But that one was always very confusing to me until I got a download that it really doesn't have to be confusing if you simply think of that as running positive programming in your life, which is about truth, and which is the whole purpose of our podcast, is trying to find ways to explore what's true, what's not true, and what works out best for us to live our lives in an energy that is demonstrating what love is. And, you know, so we have to go back to define what love is. You know, it's patient, it's kind, it hopes all things, believes all things, it's not puffed up, it doesn't seek its own, it never fails. You know, those are some really good descriptions of it's not selfish. So, you know, that's the way I want to live my life. I want to be in maximum service to others and those about me, and not practice fear, ultimately, is what I'm wanting to get away from.
Can I make a quick point here? And that is recognizing that sometimes, you know, when we do the podcast, we talk a lot about, you know, being in quiet space and going into meditation. I know for me over time, I've had to find different words to describe or to in some way clarify steps for myself, distancing myself from the religious structure. So I found over time that I had a difficulty using word prayer, because immediately it sets up a dynamic in my brain that I'm beseeching some power outside of myself to make me better.
Right.
Or to get me what I need, or get me. And so in order to shift from that, meditation becomes a better route, because that's a communion, that's a coming together. And I think using prayer as, I want to be clear here, using prayer I think is great, and a great thing about this adventure in truth is that we can begin to look at prayer differently. You know, because there's nothing wrong with the confused human reaching out to its soul expression to gain clarity and understanding about a particular aspect of my life that's going on. I think it's amazing to be able to get into that space, because in meditation you do achieve that space, that supplicant place, that openness and willingness to allow something greater to bring my attention. And that something greater isn't bestowing itself to me in that process. I'm engaging it.
Right.
A different experience.
And what you keep bringing us back to is the it really is ourself, as we see ourself as a part of God, as a part of the all. And the way that I was taught to pray that I don't ascribe to any longer is what you said earlier, is that seeing something separate from me, that I'm asking help. I'm asking for help, or I'm saying thank you. That's really what it comes down to. I'm either saying thanks, Dad, or hey, can you help me out here?
Right.
And
or can you help them out?
Right. Yeah, sure. But I want you to help them out, because I'm connected to them and it'll make me feel better. So it really always comes back to us anyway, in some way.
Yeah.
It's nice to think that we could be that altruistic, but ultimately everything that we want for others is so that we can be glad for them, which means I'm glad, right? It really always comes back to us at some level.
and so, there is nothing wrong with that.
Right. Like, absolutely.
Never change.
Right. Right.
When Mother Teresa was moving about the planet doing her thing, she did it because it brought her great satisfaction. It brought her an immense sense of peace, because she created that and chose to share that energy with other people.
Right.
It's really, really important distinction. Nobody is on this planet for anybody else. We're in it together, but we're here to move this spark, my spark. I'm this unique spark that brings something fabulous and powerful and useful to the energy of this planet. So is Jeff, and so is Sue out there listening, and Paul and Steve and Joe and John and Luke the dog and the birds. It's all the same, just different perspectives of the same process. Sorry.
These distinctions are important as we're continuing to develop this particular podcast. It's really layered on top of many others. But what we're really, I hope, laying down a nice foundation of is each and every issue that is bothersome to anybody is rooted in fear at some level. And fear is actually a frequency. Emotions have a frequency. Like Jim was saying, everything is energy. And if we could begin to see that a higher vibration away from fear is where we want to live. But in order to do that, we have to first address what the fears are. We have to be brave enough. We have to be heroic. I'm using that word purposefully here as a lead-in. But we have to be heroic and courageous to explore the things that have been in the foundations of our fear database from children. And that we're still, sometimes we even go out of our way. It blows my mind how people go out of their way to pay hard-earned money to go watch a scary film. And I understand that people have a sense of I'm alive, and they're projecting themselves into that scene, running away from, dealing with the nemesis or whatever it is. Now, I understand all that, but subconsciously, unconsciously, you've just terrified and traumatized a part of your mind that already is traumatized and terrified. And we just don't need to be doing that.
And the mind doesn't distinguish.
No, not part of the mind doesn't know the difference.
It's so important to understand that it's not seeing, it's not watching a movie. It's having an experience.
Yeah.
And it's imprinting that experience depending on how much you do it. And the more that you do it, the more it starts to show up in your real life in varying forms. It may not show up as mass murderer or as a serial killer or as, you know, it, but it will show up in many other ways that will stimulate the same fear. Because the feeling, the fear, the experience is what you keep wanting to generate. That's what your field does. It's vibrating constantly, and it's undulating, and it's creating experience. And if the core vibration is fear, then it's going to continually seek. It's going to continue. Your mind will continue to send out those vibrations, and your energy will continue to send out those vibrations to attract what it is you think is good to you. And then you start wondering why my life doesn't seem to be feeling good, or how did I attract this crazy nutbag into my life? Or people start treating you differently or weirdly, or you feel accosted, whatever. You mentioned this, I think, at the very beginning. You got to go meta. It's not about the details of Jason killing 14 people on the screen. It's the energy of the entire experience that's happening. And that energy is becoming your experience. And now you're going to play that out however you do, based on your personality and the people and what you've created in your life. But it's not a direct correlation in the sense that, oh, okay, Jason killed this person, so that's going to, no. It's the energy that is created because of that.
Sure. And that oftentimes I've seen, I know we're a little bit off topic, but since we're here, it's certainly worth pushing into. The number of people that, as they spend X number of sessions with me and I'm doing an intake or just a review of what they're exposing themselves to, the people that I've worked with that go out of their way and they say their favorite genre of movie is some kind of a horror movie or whatever they're calling it now, thriller or something, it isn't that they're hanging out with people that are killing animals or doing strange things. They have irritable bowel syndrome. They have chronic skin disease. They've got dots and lesions all over their body because their body is in a state of unease that we call dis-ease. And they're having panic attacks. And it's just like that stuff is manifesting. It comes out of the unconscious, subconscious, not real fear frequency. And we hold that in our mind. And that the mind only knows, it either only knows how to transmit it into the physical or to transform it back into the metaphysical, which is it's not real, it doesn't exist, and I need to stop exposing myself to this. And then I go back into the positive programming again of I'm whole, I'm complete, I lack for nothing, everything is always working out for me. This spirit, this soul cannot be killed, it cannot be harmed, death doesn't hurt. All of these positive programs have to actually be the foundation of our belief systems. Otherwise, we're going to be afraid. And then we'll act out accordingly and we'll live our lives in a pain base. We'll have pain-filled lives, physically, emotionally, spiritually.
Yes. And that's not, and it's not a blame thing, but it's important to recognize that it is a creation thing, because it is not required that anyone live in fear. It's not required that anyone live in that energy. We do it for as long as we do it until it shows us what we need to understand. You know, I can't think of anyone, at least at my generation, that didn't go through, I went through it. It didn't spend, I don't know, 5 or 6 years being obsessed with horror movies. You know, when I was in high school, that was the thing, you know, but there's a point where it just, again, saturation, where what's going on in that environment is so, so negatively intense that there's a point where that no longer serves. And when you migrate through that, it doesn't mean that you haven't created some energy there that you might have to deal with, but it is also part of the life experience to choose experiences and to go in them in whole body and to really experience to the greatest depth you can, because that's how we learn. That's how we evolve. We don't do that by having thoughts. We do that by having experiences, and then the thoughts generate momentum to keep us moving, you know, toward whatever it is we're feeling about, you know? So I just want to be clear that we're never coming from a place in this, on this platform with this podcast, that any choice is a bad choice. Any choice is just a choice. The ramifications of that choice are good or bad depending on how you exercise it, how you see it, and how it affects your experience and how it affects the experience of the people around you. So if you have any experience, you go into it, you're wholehearted in it, and you realize that it no longer serves, then you make different choices, and that changes your vibration because you now no longer associate to that vibration. And as you continue to move in your own progress, as you evolve past that vibration, it doesn't mean that the things that were created there aren't stuff that might need to be dealt with, but also you're no longer living in that vibration, so you're not attracting that stuff anymore. You're not at that level. When you migrate, that's why we go through so many phases of life and so many experiences of life to, how does this fit? How does this feel? Where is my energy in this? Is it something that's causing my energy to expand and this is cool? And then you outgrow it because the vibration no longer serves. So then you move on to something else.
Right. So. Intuitively, Jim, our internal compass, our internal wisdom knows that Western medicine and psychiatry, by and large, are not the solution. So person A lives a life of being unhealthy, and being unhealthy is simply a way to avoid some level of pain. If I'm eating more than is good for me, I am offsetting the lack of serotonin that my body no longer makes because I'm sad, I'm afraid, but I'm in pain. So when I'm eating more than is necessary for my body to function, I add weight, and over time that weight puts stress on my heart. It fills up my arteries with cholesterol. And 3 decades later, my doctor says, you need a bypass. You need something physical to take care of this physical problem. And we go, oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I want to live, so I'll do that. Not realizing that this is a 30-year layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of fear that has resulted in a state of dis-ease,
right,
that the doctor's not going to be able to fix. He's going to be able to give some temporary relief. You might get another 5 years. If you don't go back and address the original fears of, I'm not lovable, I'm not acceptable, people won't like me, I don't fit in, there's something wrong with me, mommy didn't love me enough, I didn't get breastfed, whatever all this stuff is sitting on top of, Uncle Bob touched me in the wrong place and now I feel like a victim for my whole life, or what, and I'm not trying to make fun of any of that stuff. I'm just going over it very quickly. So if I've offended anybody and by, you know, making light of it, I'm not making light of it. I'm just saying I've heard all of this, and I know that Prozac isn't going to actually address Uncle Bob touching you when you were 6 years old. And now you're 26 or 36 or 56 and you're depressed, feeling like life has no meaning because you've played the role of a victim all these years. And so where I got on this thought thread was this notion that intuitively we know that a pill, the physical, we know something physical, even though there's a physical manifestation of a, what we would call a problem, we intuitively know that it's not the solution. Otherwise, people would be lined up out the psychiatrist's door going, oh, thank you so much for these pills. But nobody goes into a psychiatrist's office going, oh, I know this is going to solve my problem. This is the answer. Everybody reluctantly holds them in their hand and looks at them and then, again, reluctantly takes them because they're basically saying, I'm now admitting that I don't know how to live life in a way to not feel this way, and somehow this pill is going to make me feel better. And it will temporarily, but it won't actually take the fear away.
I would I tell my clients one of the things that that I think helps in understanding the change when you're changing vibration or you're trying to expand consciousness or you're looking to break old habits, whatever the case is, you know, it doesn't have to be some elevated thing. But what I would always tell people is that when you do your daily practice, you're establishing a vibrational foundation. And just by doing that, anything that doesn't resonate at that vibration has to change. It has to. It's the law of energy. If you're vibrating here and you have other vibrations, there has to be resolution for this vibration to stabilize and for the vibration to increase and to continue to evolve. So when you make a decision, when you go step out, maybe it's a massage, maybe it's yoga, maybe whatever it is, if you approach it from the perspective of this is creating a state shift for me, then the things that you need to attend to will show up naturally because they have to. And what shows up can be unpleasant, it can be uncomfortable, and you could, whether you have a mentor or, you know, you see somebody like Jeff or somebody like me, the whole point of it is then to navigate it, not from the perspective of hashing it out, but from the perspective of getting it out of your vibration. So getting it out means this is where my work is now. My work is at this frequency that I'm continuing, you know, my daily practice. I feel myself getting lighter and more connected. And yet I'm confronted with this really dark thing over here. Part of the change in vibration will help you to become an observer of that, but recognizing that the thing that needs to change will become present in your awareness just by virtue of making the change. Now, how you handle that is a whole different animal, because some run from it and eat, and some run from it and smoke, some run from it and drink, and some stand up and go, yeah, I don't want this vibration anymore. And I'm using vibration as the word, but I don't want this problem. I don't want this issue. I don't want this history anymore. How do I navigate through this? And hopefully you find someone who does establish their vibration above that mass consciousness so that they can guide you through, or at least are in a place that's further along than you are to help you guide through that forest of stuff.
Right.
Because that's really what it's about then there's lots of valuable tools and resources and therapies and things that you can do, but recognizing that it's once you establish the shift to shift the vibration, it's going to show up naturally. Now, what do you do? Where do you go from here?
So to put some different terms on that.
Perfect.
We're talking about when you say change your state, I would add of mind behind that, changing your state of mind. And it's an energetic state, but it's easier to conceive of that of I'm changing my state of mind from a state of dis-ease to a state of ease, or from a state of upset to a state of set, although that's kind of an odd word, but I want to be set for life. We have that expression, right? From a state of discontent to content, from a state of fear to a state of love. And all those have different, you know, variances and concepts, but that's what we're talking about is I'm changing my channel from the slasher to the animal planet. Slasher film to the animal. I'm deciding, taking a conscious choice of direct. I'm turning the steering wheel on the ship. I'm redirecting, and it may take a while to get that thing to turn all the way around, but that's okay because I'm actually choosing to do it. I can do this. And even if you've been at it for 30 years, well, it's better to start today than wait another year to get going on trying to identify what fears am I really operating in. And there's so many. And this is not a one-time, you can't just listen to this podcast and think, okay, well, great. I've listened to Dr. Smith and he said, don't be afraid of anything and don't have to be afraid of death. And there's nothing wrong with me, really. Okay, got it. Well, this is an ongoing, everyday thing that you have to do. And here's why. Because just in the last week, we've still got the impeachment thing going on. We now have the possibility of a war going on. Somebody shot an airplane down recently, and what's that going to do to the stock market? And there's just all these things. And we've got climate change we're still dealing with. Who's going to get elected next year?
Yeah, Australia's burning down.
It's just like every day there's another thing that we're presented with that's possibly taking us down the path of fear. Like, oh my gosh, there's a problem here that we don't have a solution for. Is that really true? Or we just haven't figured it out yet? Or we can go back to the everything is always working out for me. But that could be a really difficult challenge that you are invited to go through. Because on the backside of it, you now know who you are because you survived and sustained yourself through a difficult challenge. And you may come out of it without a limb. Sometimes these challenges, you get burned. You literally, in the physical world, have an encounter with something really, really difficult. But as a result of that, you actually get to know, I can do that. The people that I admire the most are really the ones who have been through the most. The ones who somehow dodge it and slip under or run away from it or whatever, and they're unscathed. It's like, we call them rats. We call them cockroaches. Oh, that's funny. Right?
There's a you're in a law of attraction. They talk about. She talks about a lot about the idea that when you achieve that shift in state, when you make that connection, that the larger part of you knows the path of least resistance. And the path of least resistance can be navigated if you're willing to keep your focus forward moving. Meaning, I know that this is my desire. I want to be over here. I have no idea how to get there from here. I don't know what's in the way of me getting there from here. You don't have to think about all that. Set your intent, set your clarity, find that alignment, go there and let yourself be guided through the path of least resistance. It doesn't mean you're not going to encounter contrast or problems or things to be addressed. But if you recognize that because of that connection, I'm on the path of least resistance. So now I just have to stay there and navigate through, like you were talking about, people who go through a lot, who seem to be able to get through it and come out much greater and much better because they've allowed that themselves to be navigated through that path of least resistance and not consumed by it, not consumed by every boulder you have to go around and every tree you have to climb or whatever it is you got to do. It's just a step. It's not a thing. You know, it's just I don't know if that made sense.
Well, we're all here on different paths, yet we do have some things in common. That most of us, I believe, want to get to a place where we can live in a state of ease, mm-hmm. mentally. And that doesn't mean I want to be served caviar and have people, you know, wave palm branches over me to fan me. That's not my definition of ease. Yeah. I want to be able to take on difficult challenges and create sustainable lifestyles and be a disruptor of old systems that are selfish based and ego driven. I like being a change agent of those things, which requires a lot of bravery to step into that space. But if I do that knowing that everything is always working out for me and that I was put on this planet to do those sorts of things, I can do those difficult things in a state of ease, in a state of confidence, in a state of bravery.
Non-resistance.
Yeah, and be willing to just stand there in the face of what could be danger, or the face of adversity, or trolls, or haters, or whatever you want to call them. And those are just reminders of, are you really serious about doing this work? You know, we will have people come up as adversaries and a nemesis or enemies. And those aren't really, that's not what they are. Those are just people that love us enough in an interesting way to let us know, or, you know, make us ask ourselves, are we really serious about practicing this thing called love?
Right.
Is if reflection. If nobody ever slaps you in the face, you never get to learn how to forgive. If nobody's ever unkind to you, you never learn how to practice kindness in the face of unkindness. It's easy to be kind to somebody that's kind to you. Mm-hmm. So these things that we would say called problems or obstacles or challenges or hardships, they're not. These are the lessons we've signed up for that are right in front of us with the mean teacher, with the mean coworker, with the mean whatever, as just a way of saying, you have what it takes to deal with this. Can you do this without losing your cool? Can you do this knowing that you're going to make it through and it's going to be okay? Even though the wind is blowing, even though everything looks like it's flying all out of control and there's chaos, okay, keep going.
Yep. Yeah, it's an interesting thing, you know, the keeping going and recognizing that the fear is, and this is what we keep talking about, is that underlying a lot of those responses is some level of it. So that whenever you're confronting anything, most of the time there's nothing to be afraid of. It's a thing. It's a thing in front of me that I have to deal with. So how do I deal with it? Well, if you introduce fear from the beginning, you're automatically putting yourself at a deficit because you're not responding to the highest, you're responding to the lowest common denominator. So it's important to really ask those questions and to be diligent in that process of you're not, it's not grinding. I think one of the things you said earlier, the difference is that it doesn't have to be, ease is about it not being hard, and life doesn't have to be hard. It can be challenging. It can be a lot of things, but it's hard when fear drives the experience because it doesn't appear that there's a way for that to change.
Right.
Where getting to that ease place begins to create that space and opportunity where you start to think, okay, I don't have to stay there. I can be anywhere.
Right.
You know, it'd be interesting to if there was a study done of over the years of all of the various people who have come from those backgrounds that are apparently stuff you don't get out of, you know, whether there's somebody who made it big out of the slums or, you know, somebody who achieved a lot from adversity earlier in their lives, to really have a dialogue and find out where they're when they stopped being afraid, because that's when their life changed completely.
Right.
And so it looks like they did a whole bunch of stuff that to them was like nothing, because they weren't being afraid of it. They were just approaching what was in front of them, and they said, "Oh, I'm going to do this now. Okay, now I have to do. Okay, I'm going to deal with this now." And so it never became a fear thing. And so they never got hooked back and pulled back. But I'm sure there are just as many who did, who right. were striving for that success, but let the fear overcome them. And it pulled them right back to where they were or close to where they were.
A few minutes ago, you said most of the time there's nothing to be afraid of. And it reminded me of, I don't know how this came to me, but in the last couple of days, I don't read the Bible a lot these days. Let me be more honest. I rarely read the Bible today unless I'm specifically looking for something that I remembered or I want to get more insight from. But somehow it came to me within the last couple of days that fear not is mentioned 80 times in the Bible. 80 different times in the Bible, we're told, fear not. And so I would go on record by saying there's actually never a time, I don't use absolutes very often, to be afraid. The feeling of fear shows up in the presence of danger. The difference between danger and fear is danger is real and fear is imagined. There's a big difference between the two. Like you go to the zoo and the tiger's out and it's a man-eating tiger or a woman-eating tiger. That's danger. And your body is going to be filled with fear. And you'll hopefully not fight the tiger. You'll probably run away from the tiger. The other option would be freeze and hope it doesn't see you and let it pass and then run away. Fear, on the other hand, would be going back to the zoo the next time, getting close to the tiger exhibit, and your body's telling you the tiger's going to get out. Your mind is telling you the tiger's going to get out, and then that starts showing up in your body as panic or alarm or anxiousness or whatever. But there's actually no time under any circumstances that we should actually truly be afraid of something that isn't actually showing up as danger. It might be just around the corner, but until the danger actually shows up, being afraid actually inhibits us. It certainly does with me. It inhibits me from being my best in that moment. Fear is an energy that compresses me. My vocabulary changes. My thought process changes. I get disoriented. I don't know what's up, and I don't. It's like all of a sudden, I mentally go into the fetal position. If you're really afraid, the natural instinct is to curl up into the fetal position. But before I do that physically, my mind starts going into the fetal position. And I hate that feeling. I absolutely hate that feeling. So what I've begun to train myself to do is when I'm starting to feel agitated, irritated, upset, is go, oh, fear is about ready to have its way with me. And that's not happening this time. What is it I'm actually afraid of? Oh, that person doesn't understand me. Okay, well, let's take a little longer to develop this thought thread. Right. Or, oh, that person's not going to like me. Okay, well, so I need everybody to like me? It's just, if you actually sit with these things and you get good at it, you will be able to work yourself right out of that belief system that isn't real, that it isn't true. You know, one of the things, so any thoughts about that? How we, there's really never justification to feel afraid, but the feeling will be justified if there's true danger present. The feeling of fear is different than the imagination of fear.
Yeah, and the only place that I was going with it is in the start of the second book concept was about changing the concept or the understanding of what the ego is about in our experience. And one of the things that I write about that I, in that regard, is having to do with the difference between an event that is, as you're talking about, danger, that it creates a chemical reaction in the body that, to my understanding, limited though it may be, is more of a superhuman state than it is a subhuman state. Meaning that in many cases when that happens, and this is the reason I'm bringing it up, is because I tend to have a little different thought process about whether it's called fear, because it's a chemical reaction that's caused by the events that are occurring. But what happens as a result is things like, or can happen as a result, are things like the mom that can lift the car off the baby. Those events that we become superhuman in order to overcome or to adapt or to deal with that circumstance as it confronts us. The only thing I'm throwing in the mix is wondering is if, to your point, actually, fear is a choice, meaning there's danger. How do I respond to the danger? Well, my body's already going there. My body's going to do what it does naturally. It's going to release all of those chemicals that bring me to a state of awareness. And then once I'm in that state of awareness, am I going to be afraid or am I going to take action? It isn't that you can't have both. You know, you're going to feel those feelings, but that's all of that chemical in your body that's like trying to get you to step. It's trying to get you to, what am I going to do next? Am I going to freeze? Am I going to, you know, what's the most effective step I can take? Because I begin to wonder, is like even the survival instinct, is the survival instinct driven in fear? That almost doesn't make sense to me. Because when you're confronted at survival, whether it's freeze, fight, or flee, somewhere there has to be information coming at you that gives you the answer to that question. Because in most cases, you're going to do the thing that creates survival, not creates death. So it could be different in any given circumstance. But if you introduce fear into that experience, you alter your ability to go there.
Right. So alarm would be another word that might like help us. So, but an alarm can be an accurate alarm. And also we have a concept of a false alarm. And so to me, fear is a false alarm. Danger has actually not manifested.
Good.
But I've been exposed to these variables or these conditions before, and what happened next was danger. So my mind is already going into a state of alarm prematurely, as if I won't know what to do, or I need the advanced notice so that I'll be able to fight, run away, or freeze even better than I did the first time. It's almost like the mind is trying to give us an advanced benefit of dealing with something because it was so awful the first time. And it's not necessary. I always hear people say, I could never do that again, or man, that would kill me if I had to do that again. And the reality is, well, if you paid attention when you went through it the first time, you now have more information of dealing with that event than you ever did before. And the fear of the unknown, that's really what it is. Fear is about the unknown. It's just a prognostication. It's predicting. It's a forecast. And it's not always right, but it's based on the ego trying to preserve something that spiritually we know doesn't need preservation. You don't need to preserve this soul spirit part of us, and that's the energy we want to operate in.
Yeah.
So yeah, we could chew on this a bunch and dissect it all kinds of different ways, but ultimately, if we're asking ourselves moment by moment by moment, and doing maybe what the Apostle Paul talked about, is before you get to the point where you recognize you've made a state change going from content to discontent, he's saying and encouraging us to constantly be running these programs, telling ourselves that we're whole, complete, we lack for nothing, that everything is always in the process of working out for me. I'm not subject to illness, injury, or disease, that I'm made with awe. I'm here on the planet for a reason. We could go on and on and on, and should, with these, some people call them affirmations, but they're actually just truths. They're just straight up truths. And when we're operating in the truth, we will feel content. We will feel brave. We will feel engaged. We'll be operating in those upper frequencies. That's a much, much better experience than the alternative. And that's where we want to be. That's where we're striving to be. Yes. And not giving ourselves over to another loved one who's struggling and wants us to pull us into their frequencies, because we have this saying, misery loves company. And people, if you don't think what I'm going through right now is that important, then just good for you. You know, just blow me off. Just won't even resonate with me or validate my feelings. And that's just a bunch of hooey, because that's just a story they got going in their head. And sometimes I look at them and I go, if you love me, why would you want me to feel what you're feeling? Why, and how's that going to, if you're drowning and you want me to jump into that mess, aren't you just going to take me down with you? It's like, here's a lifeline. Here's a lifeline of love. You're whole, you're complete, you lack for nothing. It seems to me that there's some sense of a false alarm going off in your mind that you're operating in a level of fear. Oh, you want to see fear? Well, F you. And you just, it's like, okay, well, I'm still not going there. I'm not going to that place.
Yes.
And it's okay if you don't understand me right now, or I don't understand you. It's okay if I actually feel disconnected from you right now. I don't have to have that sense of connection all the time to feel okay about myself. I don't need my boss to admire me. I don't need my teacher to admire me. I don't need my parents to admire me. I'm okay as I am. The universe will give me prompts to file off my rough edges, yeah, as we are encouraged to do. But really all that means is I'm giving up fear and I'm learning to walk in the energy of love more and more day by day. There was a study, you've heard me mention this before, Jim, where people were asked to capture their thoughts. This is a well-documented, repeated study many times over. So people were asked, people of various ages and various cultures, is a well-done study that it took all the variables into account. People were simply asked, write down all your thoughts for as long as you can tolerate it. There was no instruction given to think on positive things or think on negative things. It was just let your mind do what it does. It's on autopilot. Record it into a tape recorder. Write them down. Any way that you can capture your thoughts, do it. And then submit them. So a panel of judges was created, and all these thoughts on paper in various ways came in. And the panel of judges put them in two piles, a positive thought pile and a negative thought pile. And then they did all the averaging of how many thoughts and how many people, and they came up with 70% of the thoughts were negative. That's an alarming number, that if you just let the world we live in, 70% of the time, if we just go with the flow, we're going to flow negative. And to me, that's again why maybe the Apostle Paul said, if we don't pray without ceasing, you're going to be sad, frowny face 70% of the time for no reason.
Yep.
Other than you're just caught up in how the ego operates, how the mass consciousness operates, how the collective consciousness operates. 70% of the time, it's going to be bad news, fake news, whatever news is. Why do I even need to know this news?
Yeah.
70% of the time. And that's going to be some level of fear. Whether it's a lot of fear or a little fear, it's still fear, and it's not going to feel good.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be the foundation. It's a great place to, I think, to bring us home. Just, you know, that's amazing food for thought and amazing, to me, motivation. That if we know that if we do nothing, 70% of the time, we're hanging out in a negative field. So anything you do to improve that improves your circumstance. So even if you don't understand the idea of it's all energy and it's all vibration, if you understand math, it's pretty straightforward. If you do nothing 70% of the time, you will be unhappy. So what can you do every minute of every day, or as often as you think about it, to create a change in that percentage?
You know, yes.
I think it's the same with consciousness. You know, it's all the same. It's all same. You know, the further you migrate up through the mass consciousness, the less dense it becomes. And you begin to have different types of quality thought. You begin to have less of that 70% because you're not, your brain, your receptor isn't dialed into that density. It's dialed into lightness. It's dialed into, and when I say lightness, I mean less dense energy, meaning the all of that negativity is very dense, very heavy energy that sort of sits on the planet, you know, and as you migrate your consciousness, it gets better and better. And when you have those peak experiences where you bust through, those are the things you strive for, and then create a foundation at that level, so that now your percentage point goes way down. But I don't want to mix metaphors here. But
sure.
The idea being, if nothing else, if 70% of the time, make different choices.
That also means that 70% of the people around you, 70% of the time, are going to be in the 70% negative thinking. So even if you're in the positive thinking, if you don't stay there purposefully, you will drift over to the dark side. It's just inevitable. It's the law of homeostasis. It's the law of supply and demand. It's just what happens to us.
Yeah, the universe is like a vacuum.
Yeah. Yeah.
it's science. If there's a vacuum, it will be filled. And if your vibration is predominantly in the 70%, it will be filled. Yeah.
Great discussion, Jim. Good work tonight. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know we wanted to go to a little bit different place tonight, and we can still do that. But I think this lays a foundation that,
it's just a multiple journey. That's all. That's all.
Exactly.
We got the good foundation laid first.
That's right. We hope you all got some value from this. I know we did. There's always amazing aha moments and extraordinary connecting of dots, even as the hosts that we get to experience on a weekly basis.
Absolutely.
So we are so grateful for your being a part of our experience, and those of you out there that are listening. We're on all the major platforms. You can check out our website, www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com, for our latest episodes. You can sign up on our YouTube page if you prefer to see us rather than just hear us. We're on all the major ones, Spotify and Apple and Deezer and other ones that I'm not thinking of, Podcast Addict. But we look forward to connecting with you. We are in the process of our own growth and development, which we're very excited about, and we'll be sharing more of that as we move forward. So thanks again for accompanying us on a most excellent adventure. And Jeff, thank you for bringing in a most excellent topic.
You're very welcome. Until next time.
Until next time. Good night, everybody. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth Podcast. If you would like to listen to more or to explore all our offerings, visit us on the web at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. We also offer video versions of our podcast. Visit our page on YouTube at Adventures in Truth Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Like, connect, and follow with us on Facebook. Want to book us for your next podcast or to speak at your event? Head over to our webpage at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com at the bottom of the page and send us a note. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you again at Adventures in Truth Podcast.